The Ghost Goal Podcast.
There was another shift at the top of the league as Liverpool slip up at Old Trafford, left the door open for Arsenal to jump back into first place. With just 6 games remaining, it's all Arsenal's to choke now. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast. That Liverpool-Manchester United game certainly gave us plenty to talk about in terms of actual gameplay that led to Liverpool drawing 2-2, some great goals from Manchester United. And, of course, the aforementioned reascendance of Arsenal back into first place after they beat Brighton on Saturday. Javier, were you able to watch that Liverpool-Manchester United game? And how much did you celebrate those drop points by Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, what a game it was. As a, you know, I'll say that the quality of play was definitely better than the FA Cup game that we saw a couple weeks ago, that 4-3, that crazy game. You know, I think in this game, there was a little bit more of controlled play from both teams. I mean, Manchester United played their role of counterattack, and Liverpool were, you know, the big team going after United. They, you know, they really should have been out of sight in that first half. They had, you know, numerous chances. I think Salah missed, you know, arguably a sitter. You know, Manchester United basically created nothing outside of that one offside goal that they got when Garnacho just was like in on goal and went a little bit too early and would have basically scored and been up 1-0 from absolutely nothing. And really, they just got back in the game from a crazy bad mistake from Kwanzaa passing the ball to Bruno there, and Keller was off his line. I mean, what a shot that was from, you know, basically midfield.
Yeah, he got out. Bruno got out the pitching wedge on that one. Just a nice driven chip.
He makes it look really easy, but the technique on that is really hard, and there's a lot of players who will shank that wide, and people won't necessarily be like, ah, what a chance missed, like, if he misses from there, you know, people aren't going to be like, that was a great chance, you know, so he just kind of created that out of nothing, and yeah, that was super impressive. A lot of technical skill goes into that, so I thought it was a great goal, but it really just surged United back into the game, and after that they had, you know, like a Garnacho deflected strike that almost went in, and then that play that Casemiro starts, you know, he's in his half, gets the ball to his feet, flicks it up like over his head basically, and then scissor kicks it into midfield into Kobbie Mainoo, who's just like in acres of space, but you know, Casemiro has his back to Mainoo at this point, and there's like two players bearing down on him. He scissor like overhead kicks it to Mainoo. Mainoo controls it, dribbles through midfield, like beats a player, plays a ball out to Garnacho, who like dribbles inward and then passes it out to Wan-Bissaka, who crosses it back into Mainoo, and then that like first touch from Mainoo, like he was calling for the ball already. He already had the thought in his head that he was going to shoot. And like what player at 18-year-old in midfield who, you know, again, we already saw that first goal he got for Manchester United was unbelievable. His second goal, another unbelievable goal, shades of, we've already, you know, everyone's I'm sure been seeing it on social media, Felipe Maqueda's goal when he did the,
Federico Maqueda.
Oh, Federico Maqueda. Yeah. But yeah,
I was about to say they're the only 18-year-olds because Maqueda was like famously 17 or 18 when he scored that. I think it was 2008 or 2009 against
Aston
Villa.
Yeah, and it like helped pretty much won them the title that year. So yeah, that was a huge goal. But
not, it that one broke this goal my heart wasn't, as a Chelsea wasn't, fan. But yes,
this goal wasn't that big, but it was a big goal for United.
It was for the time it was scored, like with what 15, 20 minutes left, game 1-1. Like, obviously, Liverpool hadn't equalized again at that point, so it potentially given.
Well, you knew that there was still
going to
be a lot there. You knew there was going
to
be a lot left in the
game.
Yeah, it was.
A potential winner.
I was giving him his props, but I thought that was a contender for goal of the season because of that whole play. I just thought the whole play was beautiful, and you got to go back and watch it from the start from Casemiro's play.
Do you think it's better than Garnacho's a bicycle kick against Everton?
Probably not, no. But it was a beautiful
Rodrigo,
play.
What about Rodrigo Muniz, his bicycle kick against Sheffield a couple weeks ago?
Well, I think it's around that level, yeah.
I think those two bicycle kicks are like the clear front runners for goal of the season. Mainoo's is It's good. I think it will be like in the nominees, but I don't think it's going to end up winning.
Yeah, honestly, I was saying it's a nominee.
The Wolves winner might be better. You know, the nutmeg of the defender and then just perfect curler like into the bottom corner instead. This is just a bigger stage for Manu to do it on, obviously, against the Liverpool team that's going for the title. But what do you think this means for Liverpool? They obviously relinquished their spot in first place.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, and then Liverpool came back into it like we knew they would, you know, pulling, I think, kind of a bullshit penalty. I think McAllister was looking, or not McAllister, Elliot was looking for it already. He was going down and he saw Wan-Bissaka on the floor and just clipped his own leg on Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka shouldn't go to ground like that in the box, but, you know,
I think you're reading a lot more from that than could have actually been the case.
It doesn't really matter.
He taps the ball away from Wan-Bissaka like you would when you're trying to, you know, keep the ball in the box. I don't think that necessarily means the intention is he's trying to win a penalty. Just think he's trying to keep the ball. And then, like you said, Wan-Bissaka is just foolish to go like to ground there. You don't usually see that from him. He's usually, you know, more steady on his feet, and he has the reaction time to stay light on his toes and stay in front of people. But that was like a Diego Dalot level mistake.
You got to think. Number one, he's not 100% fit. You know, he was hurt for 3 or 4 months. I think he's probably been rushed back into the side. He definitely can't play 3 games in a week like United have had to do. And, you know, this was already near the game, at the end of the game, so I'm sure he was really tired. So, you know, I give Wan-Bissaka some slack there. And you know, I think for Manchester United it was a great result, but for Liverpool, I mean, they had a chance to even win it at the end. Diaz had a 1v1 that he just skied over the bar, you know, 5 yards out.
It's a difficult one. It was
a difficult one. It was a volley.
When the game was 1-1 right after Bruno equalized, maybe a couple minutes after Bruno equalized, and there was a lovely Liverpool move that ended with Nunez trying to finish first time, or maybe he was trying to play it back across goal, but he could have just cut the ball back to Szoboszlai, who had like a tap in basically to make it 2-1. You feel like at that point
he had a couple maybe, of those. He had maybe, a couple of those.
Well, there was one very distinct one where Szoboszlai was just standing on the 6-yard box, like with the goalkeeper already fully committed to try and stopping Nunez's shot. It would have been 2-1. Maybe United come and get the equalizer, but it felt like that would have like stopped the United, you know, resurgence that they had that led to them taking the lead 2-1. But we'll never know. Finally,
they stopped getting away with it. I mean, I've been crying out every week saying, when are they gonna get punished for, number one, you know, going down in these games? You know, they pulled a point from a losing position this time, so they added to their record of most points from losing positions, but they didn't get the win. So, you know, you can't keep getting into losing positions and playing players like Kwanzaa and Bradley and just, you know, inshallah, hoping, you know, you're conceding every single game 1 or 2 goals. It's a dangerous game to play, and they finally got cut, you know. So I think it's
amazing that it takes.
I don't think it's game over for them, but I think it's
Liverpool having, you know, Alisson out, Konate on the bench but injured, but, you know, coming back from an injury, so Kwanzaa starts. Also, like City having like Ederson out, for Arsenal to even be like a head on goal difference at the top of the table, Javier. It just shows you that, you know, if Liverpool and City had as much injury luck as you guys have, they'd be, you know, far ahead away from you guys at this point of the season, right?
Not even going to give any response to that. It's just like the worst troll, Alex. It's not even like, that wasn't even creative. That wasn't good. Just let's move on. That was a stupid.
Hey man, if you gave me as a Chelsea fan the option, Alex, to have like one player like Timber get injured for the season, at the beginning of the season, and basically
Jesus was out for 4 months. Saka's been hurt. Martinelli's been hurt. Just shut up. You're talking shit. Zinchenko's been hurt. We've been playing our 4th-string left back. Tomiyasu was hurt for 3 months. Zinchenko was hurt for 3 months. We had to play Kiwior for that entire run. Again, your take is wrong. I can shut it down in 2 seconds, Alex. Should we keep now talking about Arsenal? Because you seem so interested in talking about Arsenal, Alex. Do you think we're going to collapse this season? This is the best start to Arsenal, like, calendar year that we've ever had. We've gotten 10 wins and one draw. We've conceded 4 goals in 11 games. We haven't conceded a goal in 5 straight away games. That's happened once in our history. That was in 2004, 2005, I think, or 2003, 2004. And we've never done it. We've never had 6 away clean sheets in a row. The last team to have 5 away clean sheets, Liverpool, in 2019-2020 when they won the league with over 100 points. It's like it's such an incredibly hard thing to keep away clean sheets, and it's so impressive the way that we're going to places like Brighton and keeping them to a Julio and Ciso curler from, you know, 25 yards out as their only chance in the entire game. And this is a team that prides themselves on possession, on creating chances, on you know having the ball and you know, they've been really good defensively this year. That's something about Brighton that's been underrated about them. Not in this calendar year, since the turn of the calendar year, they were not doing well at the beginning of the season, but you know, they've been really, really good defensively. Haven't been conceding a lot of goals, and really in the last couple of months turned it around defensively. So I think for Arsenal to be able to put in this type of performance, score 3 goals on Brighton, who, you know, just have been keeping clean sheets recently, have been, you know, keeping teams to you know, not that many goals.
I mean, they're clearly not that good defensively. They conceded 4 at Luton, lost 4-0. They conceded 4 at Roma, lost 4-0. And then they conceded 3 to Arsenal this weekend. Like,
yeah, but yeah, outside of the couple like blip, like bad results they've had, they've been very good defensively, right, at least so far recently. They haven't been scoring as much, but I don't know. It was impressive to me that we were able to score 3 goals against them.
I haven't watched too much of them like going into this game. It just felt like I was watching a Chelsea game. It felt like a team that seemed very adept at, you know, everything in between the two penalty areas. But once it got into defending their own box and trying to, you know, take advantage of the opportunities they created in their opponent's box, just lackluster, just mediocre. You know, Welbeck has been like the only player recently that's been scoring anything for them. You know, Adingra looks good in build up and has a good relationship with like Lamptey going forward. But just, it seems like his whole goal scoring aura has dried up since he came back from the African Cup of Nations, where he played well for Ivory Coast.
I think João Pedro is just coming back from injury, so that's true. One that had been scoring a lot for them, you know, before that. Pascal Gross, you know, he needs a little bit more creative attacking talent up front. You know, I think they're really missing Matoma, obviously, who's out for the season.
Yeah, rough.
Yeah, so that's been a huge loss for them. You know, so yeah, there's been some blows for Brighton, but I think they're still a strong team. And
it was a mature performance by you guys. I'll give you credit for that.
Yeah, the way that we were able to put them to the sword without... I mean, slightly nervous when I saw Zinchenko was starting in this, you know, but he was...
Yeah, I thought Adingra and Lamptey were going to be able to get at him a little bit more. And they did in the first half. Like, there was some nice
ways
they played out of the press on that right side. But then, like I said, they were just couldn't do anything once they got into Arsenal's box. Like, Adingra had a couple of half chances where he like tried it from range and just, you know, blasted it over. But they're just missing that like level of quality that a player like Matoma previously gave them. And Welbeck seems to be the only one, at least in, you know, that Liverpool game, the previous one where he scored inside of 2 minutes. He's the only one who's actually able to pull something out of his ass to get them anything. So without that, that makes sense why they lost 3-0.
And man, it felt good to take off Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Jesus in the 64th minute and bring on Martinelli and Trossard, and the level just didn't drop, right? Like, we were still able to keep up that same pressure. That's what we want. Bring on Tomiyasu. We didn't have to use players like Partey and Smith Rowe. You know, we're hitting peak fitness, peak form. Defensively, offensively, right now I don't see where the collapse is going to happen, Alex. I know that you think
those
that like
it's
100% going to happen.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, but last year you could see it, right? Because we were playing Rob Holding. William Saliba was hurt, right? You could see it. You could see it happening because we still won. I think we rattled off like still 7 or 8 wins with Holding in the team, but you knew at some point that was going to give. Like, we weren't gonna win the league with holding for an entire half of a season, or an entire third of a season. You know, the last like 12 games basically had to be played with Rob Holding. I think if we're able to stay fit right now, if we're able to stay fit, which, like, knock on wood, we are, it does feel like we can win something this season. I don't think we're going to win the double, Alex.
Oh.
But we are in first right now. How humble of you. Yes. But we are in first right now, so it's in our own hands. I mean, we needed someone to drop points. Obviously, I think of the teams left, we have probably the most difficult run. Us and Liverpool have a similar, you know, we both have, you know, have to play Aston Villa still at home, have to play Tottenham away.
Villa, Tottenham, and Wolves are going to have a big hand in who wins the league this season. Arsenal...
Wolves play all three teams.
So do Tottenham, I think. Yeah.
Tottenham, yeah.
Their game with City hasn't been rescheduled yet, but they do have one they have to make up with City. And then Wolves or Villa have to play two of the teams, while I think they just played City last week. So, there's other games, obviously, but those three teams are going to have a huge hand in who ends up winning the title.
Well, at least for the Villa game, that's in a week here for us after this Bayern game, and David Luiz got a yellow card, so he's suspended for the next few games, which includes this Arsenal game. So that's a big loss for Villa, and I think we'll, you know, hopefully make that an easier game for us if we do have to rest a couple players in between those two Champions League matches with Bayern Munich.
He means Douglas Luiz, everyone, not David Luiz.
Oh, Douglas Luiz. Sorry.
Let's move on quickly just to mention the final of those three title chasing teams. Manchester City reigniting their goal scoring with a couple of four goal performances as a team the last couple of games. Villa at home last week, we didn't mention, we haven't recorded since then. And going to Crystal Palace and winning 4-2. Haaland back on the score sheet. Julian Alvarez back in the team and, you know, scoring. I think he scored in that Villa game, at least looking like a threat. That's something that I was kind of calling for after the Arsenal 0-0. Why were City so focused on, you know, keeping the possession and not kind of like shooting themselves in the foot?
City really switched it up in this game. They went with, you know, Oscar Bob and Rico Lewis as wingbacks.
Well, Grealish left wing, Oscar Bob right wing, and then Rico Lewis as sort of one of the holding players with Rodri, and then he could like shift back into right back to cover.
Right. I mean, it was like a lot more width, I think, in the performance. It was, you know, Grealish kept getting to the touchline. Rico Lewis kept getting to the touchline. You know, De Bruyne was getting cutbacks from the top of the box. City always look really threatening when they're doing something like that. I think this Crystal Palace team was horrendous. You know, their back line of Jefferson Lerma as a center back with Joel Ward and Anderson. That's, I mean, just terrible, awful.
Yeah, in no way am I hyping up their opposition.
Will Hughes and Adam Wharton in midfield.
A couple championship players right there.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just like, I mean, great. City scored four goals against, like, basically a championship team. So, you know, Palace did well, I think, to as many chances as they did. I do want to say, Daniel Munoz, the Colombian, like, midfielder, center,
he's a right
center
back.
Whatever.
He's playing right back.
Right back. He had a shot from, like, halfway in his half that almost went in.
Oh, I missed that.
It was like, yeah, it was a really, really good shot. It almost went in. It was really impressive. But he ended up getting an own goal. But he was all over the place, and I don't know. He kind of stood out for me, and just in the match as someone to watch for the future. But yeah, impressive still from City that they've been able to get four goal performances again, and really switch up the starting lineup in both those games. In the game before, it was Foden who was the star. Foden didn't even play in this game, so that's how the depth and how good City are. And I agree with you, Alex. I think City are probably going to win every game from now to the rest of the season. I think. Will they win the title if they do that? Probably. I think we might drop points once. I think that, like, we might drop points in the Tottenham game, and that would be the time where City would have to just win out to win. But if they drop points at any point for the rest of the season, I think we'll win the title. So
what about Liverpool?
I don't think Liverpool.
You don't think they're. You don't think they're gonna win out as well?
No.
You think it's impossible?
I think no, I don't, because I think you saw it in the United game. You know, they're not, it's giving out. Like, they're going to have more performances like this where they miss chances and they let the other team concede.
That's their last truly difficult away game, though, because the Tottenham game they have to play is going to be at Anfield. You would kind of expect them to win a shootout in that.
I think they play away Villa.
Yeah, true. Okay. And Villa have taken points off City and Arsenal. So, yeah, that's a fair one. But Villa away seems much less of a daunting prospect at this point of the season than it did earlier in the season when they were playing at their best. You know, it's kind of like West Ham at points of the season have lost 6-0 to Arsenal and being destroyed by every team. But then earlier in the season, they were much better.
I'm sorry. So, Alex, they have to play away Fulham, away Everton, away West Ham.
We've been over Fulham. Fulham have played well at times at home, but then they also are in mid-table.
Right. Away Everton, will always try to put up a performance against Liverpool away. Everton, West Ham away, also not an easy ground. They've been good at home, so fighting for Europe. I don't expect their... The only easy game I see Liverpool have left is this next home Palace game, I think. And then maybe the Fulham away game, like you said. But I think their next five games after that, until Wolves, are not easy.
Okay.
Because they still have Europa League as well.
All right, I guess I have to mention the Sheffield 2, Chelsea 2 result from Sunday, as much as I don't want to. Chelsea threw away multiple leads, one right at the end in injury time for, I think it was McBurnie to equalize. Could have been up by more. As soon as I saw Chelsea hadn't gone up 3-1 going into the final dying minutes of the game, I just sort of turned to my brother and was just like, oh, well, that's perfectly set up for Sheffield to score an equalizer off a set piece here. And that's exactly what happened. So very predictable results after such a promising, not a promising performance against Manchester United in the previous midweek, but promising that Chelsea didn't give up in that game and just sort of take the 3-2 loss or the 3-3 draw near the end there and pushed on to get the winner. We didn't have the same level of conviction in our attack in this Sheffield game, and that's back-to-back weekends of 2-2 draws against the bottom two teams in the league, sandwiched in between a win over Manchester United. Nothing can encapsulate this Chelsea season more than that. Draw the two bottom teams 2-2, beat Manchester United at home in a crazy goal-scoring fest 4-3 in between those two games.
I really don't get it for Chelsea. It seems like playing Manchester United probably masks some of those problems that Chelsea have, but you know, you get that draw earlier in the week against Burnley where they were down to 10 men. That looked really, really bad. You know, you had a high beating United, but like I was saying, I think that's more United just being crap than you guys were being good. Like you said, you didn't give up, so there were positives. But then in this game, I mean, I was just bashing my head watching some of these plays. I mean, the defending was atrocious, and the Chelsea players, they're all throwing their hands up, at each other, yelling at each other. This was early in the game, too. Like, Thiago Silva, he does that terrible back pass that almost results in a goal for Sheffield, and he's throwing his hands up in the air what are you guys doing, and it's that was your fault. And then I know he goes and gets the goal, but you know, it's some of these mistakes for Chelsea, the body language on the players. I mean, it doesn't seem like some of the players care. Some of them do. Players obviously like Cole Palmer, you know, the flashes we've seen of Madueke this season, you know, he seems to be really good cutting inside, and if he can get a shot off with his left foot, he seems to be a really good talent. But it's just flashes right now, and you really have one consistent player. That's Cole Palmer. Caicedo looks like he's made of butter in midfield. I've seen now 20 different players on different teams just run right by him, and Caicedo throw his hands in the air theatrically and go to the ground. I don't know if Chelsea. I mean, Gallagher seems to be trying. He's another one who's.
I don't think it's that the players aren't trying. There's definitely some fault to be placed on Pochettino in terms of sticking with certain setups. He doesn't really have any choice but to make the Gallagher.
A bunch of the players
Caicedo,
were smiling and were fine
work.
With that result.
Yeah, but players like Lavia have been out the entire season. He only played 30 minutes. Ugochukwu played some games earlier in the season, and he's been out since the start of 2024. Probably won't play again this season. We brought back Cassidy from Leicester because we needed numbers in midfield. And he's not playing. he's always on the bench, but he's never given an opportunity to start and switch things up a little bit. So maybe that's a criticism of Pochettino, that he's, you know, seeing the same midfield three and just trying to make it work. Credit to him, he rotated a little bit with Madueke coming in and, you know, scoring the potential winner. But when Madueke plays on the right, he's good when he's given it like that much space, like he was in that Sheffield game. But you kind of lose something from Palmer, like playing as more of a number 10 when Madueke is there. Palmer has probably played his best for us when he's played on the right wing. And Jackson's played coming off the left.
Oh, God. What about that Jackson miss where he just whiffed the ball? The ball just like came like right to his feet and he just had to make contact with it in any way and put it on goal.
I was like surprised. I was surprised that Cucurella put in that good of a ball for Jackson.
Right.
And he just completely missed him. Like,
that encapsulates Chelsea right there this season. Like,
it's rough.
Ugh, just horrifying from Chelsea. I mean, I don't know where you guys go from here because...
Well, mid-table. We don't go anywhere.
Like every it feels like every time there's a positive, there's a negative the next week. And, you know, you couldn't beat the two bottom table teams. Like, you should have been spanking those teams. So, there isn't a lot... I don't know if you should keep Pochettino. It doesn't feel like performances like this are showing that you guys are... You know, you're worth anything. Let's see what you do in the FA Cup, I guess. That's all the rest that matters.
We still have the FA
Cup
to get something out of this season, though it's unlikely with us being matched up with City in the semi-final and losing every final we've gone to for the last, like, 4 or 5 years. But if we keep switching a manager every year or every couple of months, we're just going to be seeing this forever, potentially ending in relegation, because... You've got to stick by someone at some point, and we're probably not convincing anyone better than Pochettino to take the job at this point. So, I understand if people are calling for his head.
It's a reasonable take.
You're warranted. People are warranted to say that like Pochettino hasn't done a good enough job this season, but I just don't see too many alternatives. Like we're not convincing Ruben Amorim at this point from picking us over Liverpool. Liverpool are interested in him to take over from Klopp from Sporting Lisbon, but he's not going to risk his career on a club that will, you know, bin him as soon as things go bad, and other managers will feel the same way. So might as well stick by Pochettino for now and see what he can develop, because honestly, like, as bad as this last week or so and the whole season has been, I'm still seeing like marginal improvements from some players. Like Mudryk is starting to play like a good bit better, though we only came off the bench in this one. We're starting to see less of Raheem Sterling, which is an improvement from Pochettino, realizing that you're not getting anything from him. So I'm willing to stick by him, even if it's not been amazing at this point of the season. All right, let's forego the Premier League predictions, because we're going to do Champions League predictions here in a second. And the only real games that stand out next week are the Arsenal-Aston Villa game and maybe the Newcastle-Tottenham game. I'm sure Arsenal, we'll get to them in a second here, because we're going to talk about that Bayern Munich one. Javier, give us a quick...
I'm going to say 3-0 on that game, sure, by the way.
Open up the kitchen, Javier. 3-1. Stop pleasuring yourself to the thought of Arsenal beating a Villa team. And give us your fantasy kitchen for this week. Appetizers, main course, dessert. What have you got for us?
All right, Alex. Jump right into it. So for the appetizer, it's one that I've had on my radar, but he seems to now be producing week in and week out and be the most important player on Liverpool, attacking-wise, at least creatively. This is Alexis McAllister I'm talking about. Midfielder, 5.9 mil. You know, he's been producing, he's got a couple double digit hauls, 10 points against City, 10 points against Sheffield, 9 against Luton, 8 against Brentford. You know, he gets a goal or an assist seemingly in almost every game, and he's a big part of Liverpool's attack. So if you want to cheap into Liverpool's attack, which if you want three Liverpool players to end this season, I would go with attackers, because Liverpool have kept one clean sheet in their last 10 games, so you really don't want to go for defensive returns. I would go with attackers, and McAllister's just a cheap way to get into the team. So if you want a third Liverpool player, I might look for him as your third Liverpool attacking asset. For the main course, he's back, Alex. Lord. The Lord of the season. We all had him in our team earlier in the season, and he's back. Brian Mbeumo. We all had him, you know, for the first 10, 11 weeks of the season. He's 6.7 mil. And man, Brentford have a great run to end the season. It feels like him and Tony, you know, especially because Tony wasn't there earlier in the season. They haven't really been able to link up. And Mbeumo's been hurt for the last 3 months. He had a beautiful finish in that 3-3 draw that Brentford just had with Aston Villa, where Villa were up 2-0. They were cruising. It looked like they were going to just run over Brentford. And Brentford came back, scored three quick fire goals, and were playing some great, great stuff. Could have gone up 4. And, you know, I thought Brian Mbeumo was central to all of that. So he's one that that I would look to get back into the team. To end the season, look at this run. They have home Sheffield United next, away Luton, so they play the bottom two, away Everton, another bottom, you know, team, home Fulham, away Bournemouth, and home Newcastle. Leaky, Bournemouth, and Newcastle. So yeah, I just think it's a great, great run for Mbeumo and, you know, Tony as well. So if you want to look at Brentford, I think that this is the only time to get them for the rest of the season in this this run they have. And lastly, the dessert, Alex. Sweet, sweet dessert. It's time to bring him into the fantasy kitchen because he deserves it. And this is another player that's the most important player to another team in the title race. This is Rodrigo Hernandez, Alex. He is so good. I mean, just every single game, this guy's getting shots on goal, scoring big goals, scored a goal and an assist against Villa, got an assist against Palace, had a beautiful shot on goal that the goalkeeper had to save for...
Yeah, get down to his left.
You know, like in the bottom corner, yeah. And you know, it feels like every game, you know, against Arsenal as well, he was pretty much the most dangerous player for City. You know, I think he had the highest expected goals and assists against us. You know, against United, he got 2 assists. He's actually gotten 7 double-digit hauls this season, which only, I think, Palmer, Saka, and I think those are the only players that have gotten more double-digit hauls.
Surely Haaland has to be up there.
No, Haaland hasn't. Right. Yeah, and maybe Salah. So he's, like, up there with them. I think
which
it's
is insane
those three.
For the position he plays.
Watkins, yeah. For the position and for 5.6 mil, you know, City, like Alex said, probably going to win every game from now to the end of the season. They have a double game week. That Spurs game hasn't been rescheduled. So, and Rodri, he's the only player who's going to play every single game.
Yeah, I was about
game.
To say.
The guy will never be benched. He plays every minute of every game.
Plays, so, like, what better of a player can you pick for a City team that needs to
do
win every
know,
game?
Do you want to know the three games that they've lost this season, Alex?
Arsenal...
Rodri played 0 minutes in all 3 of those games.
Yeah, Villa, he was suspended. I remember that. All right, Javier.
Tells you how important
he is. You went a little longer
is.
Than I would have liked, but you're just eating into your Champions League prediction talk. So we got 5 minutes to go through 4 Champions League quarterfinals that are going to be the first legs.
No, we got a little
bit
more time. You can edit some time out, Alex. Calm down.
Starting on Tuesday, the two Premier League representatives, Arsenal and Manchester City, are going to be playing their first legs. Arsenal, first leg at home against Bayern Munich. It's here, Javier. Your chance. Your chance at redemption, at revenge.
I'm so excited for this game.
10-2 on aggregate? Should we just...
Some PTO.
You're picking 10-2
yeah,
and move
10-2.
On?
Yeah, 10-2. We win 10-2 on aggregate. Yes. We will win 10-2, 5-1, home and away. No, I think it's going to be a great tie. I think this is a Bayern team that has a lot of Champions League experience, a coach who has a lot of Champions League experience, and they're still the favorites. You know, I think this is going to be, you know,
they
on
are,
form.
They
obviously,
are not
Arsenal
still the
are
favorites. Arsenal are the favorites.
Well, they were the favorites when the tie was, you know, made on paper. So, you know, it's
really
on in terms of Champions League pedigree. Yeah, in terms of Champions League pedigree, of course they're the
no,
favorites.
Okay, so when you say they were you know, made the favorites, that usually means that like. Odds companies
betting favorites
so
yes
they were
the betting
really?
Favorite
okay
yes they were the betting
interesting
favorite. Yeah they were the betting
I
favorite.
Betting companies were usually well informed
but obviously since then it's changed yeah obviously since then it's changed
they've lost back-to-back games to Heidenheim this past weekend 3-2 and then Dortmund at home before that and Dortmund hadn't beat Bayern Munich in Munich for like a decade or something maybe shorter than that 2017
I mean it's all lining up for us to beat them Alex here at home comprehensively. And that's really what I'm expecting tomorrow. You know, I really want us to show up tomorrow. I want a big win. I want a big win
yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah, I think you guys need to hammer them in the first leg to sort of lift.
I could see us obviously losing
to benefit your Premier League.
Or drawing in Munich, maybe.
To benefit your Premier League thing. If you have a second leg at Bayern Munich and like a close first, and there was just a first close leg, then that sort of diverts the player's attention for the Premier League title challenge. So you guys need to win by like three, I think, tomorrow, which you're capable of doing.
Interesting tidbit about this game tomorrow, Alex. There will be no Bayern Munich fans in the stadium. It will be 100% Arsenal fans because Bayern Munich's fans are banned because they like threw up a bunch of flares in their away game in their last away tie knockout round.
Lazio,
so
yeah.
They've been banned for this one, which is great for us. You know, we've got to take advantage of that, of a make it a crazy night. You know, there's already a huge banner that's being displayed outside the stadium. So yeah, we gotta bring them to the Lions' den and whoop their ass, Alex. So yeah, I'm expecting hopefully like a 3-0 win at the Emirates and then maybe like a 1-1 in Munich or even a 2-1 loss. But you know, I would expect us to do the job at the Emirates in this first game right now.
Yeah, I'm picking Arsenal to go through in this one as well. But we know you're picking Arsenal, so
I'll say 5.
Don't pick
no,
the score.
On
the score can score can vary so
aggregate.
Much.
4-2 on aggregate.
All right, the second game that will be played tomorrow will be Real Madrid, Manchester City, a repeat of last year's semifinal, and a very early matchup between these two teams, who are both in their own right favorites for the Champions League. I think it might be a year too early for Real. They're certainly capable of beating Manchester City, but.
You're such a coward, Alex. You always pick Real Madrid in the Champions League. What's wrong
but, you
with
know,
you? What's
just,
what's going on with Jude
City
Bellingham
are just better
and
than them.
Vinicius
and Real Madrid,
Jr.
They have their own
fair
amount of hiccups as a team in La Liga and in the Champions League this season. They made it much tougher than it needed to be against RB Leipzig in the last round. Still went through, obviously, but I think it's going to be they're going to have to wait for Mbappe to get there to sort of have the same level of quality from top to bottom in their team that Manchester City have right now. So I think City probably it's probably close from the first leg in the Bernabeu, and then similarly to last year, City run away with it in the second leg back at the Etihad.
I agree, Alex. I think City get like a 2-2 draw at the Bernabeu and then win 3-1 or 3-0 at Manchester City. So I think City pretty comprehensively go through here against Real Madrid, and not looking forward to if we go through against Bayern Munich to play them in the semifinal.
Okay, and then on Wednesday, the other side of the bracket sees Atletico Madrid take on Borussia Dortmund. First leg is in Madrid.
Well, you know who I'm going to pick, Alex.
Who's that?
Atletico Madrid, because I give Borussia Dortmund no credit. I didn't even think they were going to get out of the group, so.
That makes
me
want to pick Dortmund
because
I picked Dortmund in both of those instances and was proven right. But I'm going to go with Atletico, too. I'm also, like, this is the team I'm rooting for to win the Champions League.
Really good right now.
I think Simeone needs
one. Doing some good things right now. So, you know, Atletico have been really good since the turn of the 2024 as well in La Liga, pushing themselves back into those Champions League, you know, spots. And I think, you know, they had a really bad start to the season. They weren't scoring goals, but they've really found their offensive touch, and Griezmann has been the main catalyst for that. Morata has been really good for them as well. So, yeah, I think that this will be a great matchup. I think they'll be close, but I think Atletico win maybe 1-0 at home and then like 0-0
Why are you
away,
doing the score predictions? Like,
that.
Like it's
no,
completely 2-0, pointless.
2-0 at home and 0-0 away or 1-1 away.
I'm going to go with Atletico as well. I'll stick by them. I want it for Simeone this season. And then finally, PSG, Barcelona. First leg of this in Paris. It's
oh, man, this is a great game, Alex. Lamine Yamal against Mbappe. This is going to be just like, a goal fest. I could see both of these games being like, you know, 3-2, you know, PSG win the first game and then Barcelona win the second game. Like,
there's also the added wrinkle of Luis Enrique going back to his old club. He was the last manager to win the Champions League with Barcelona, I believe, when they had the...
Barcelona are also on great form since the turn of the year. And, you know, even though Xavi announced his, like... that he's leaving at the end of the season. It seems like as soon as he announced that, the team kind of started playing more free. And I mean, it's really just Lamine Yamal who's been willing them to victory and been putting up incredible performances. So I'm excited to see him on the Champions League stage again. He's been performing for Barcelona. He's a player who, if he can perform, who knows if this Barcelona team can beat PSG. But PSG got to be the favorites. They've got the Champions League pedigree and they look really good. Obviously, domestically. So,
and I think Barcelona are just a little too young. Like you mentioned Yamal, but there's also Pau Cubarsí, the 17-year-old center back who's been amazing. He's been great. I think I mentioned him, but forgot his name in a previous pod. But these are players that like they've got their future is in good hands going forward. But this year, I feel like this might be the ending point for them. So I'm gonna pick.
I don't
PSG.
Know why. I feel like, yeah, I agree with you, Alex. But I'm just gonna go with Barca. I think it's gonna be a little bit of an upset. I think that there's gonna be a crazy matches, and that Barca's like young talent is just gonna shine on the Champions League stage, and they're gonna want to do it on the, you know, against someone like Mbappe. And I think Mbappe, like, already knowing that he's going to leave at the end, like, sure, he's going to want to win a Champions League with PSG, but it's not going to happen. Like,
it's set up perfectly for them, though.
I think it comes at the end of the road here. Yeah, it is, to get to the final for sure.
All right, thank you for listening, everyone. If you want to follow Javier, you can do so at JavierRev9 on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the Champions League quarterfinals this week and the Premier League football next weekend. And until next time, see you.